Adventist World Radio, from broadcast to baptism, powered by SID Media.
Pastor Maluleke, good afternoon to you, sir.
Good afternoon, sir, and how are you today?
Very well, thank you. How are you doing?
I'm doing well.
Lovely.
No worries.
I'm actually looking forward to the Sabbath, man. So I'm excited. I'm happy. But I just wish that the Sabbath could begin already. So, yeah, that's my mood. That's my mood.
That's great. Looking forward. I'm looking forward to it as well. I have a lot of preparations to do.
Now, let's conclude our discussions, man. We've been talking about practicing faith in a secular world since Monday, and it's been a fantastic one, I must tell you. And if you're out there and you've missed out, my goodness, have you missed out? But hey, hang on. If you actually go to our website, click on podcasts, you're able to get these conversations. Now, Pastor, we are going to be continuing, man. I must thank you first for, being with us the week over. I mean, you really, really have taken a lot of your time speaking to us here on AWR, and I'm grateful so much for that. Now, according to a Spring 2022 Pew Research Center survey, in European and North American countries, at least 6 in 10 respondents believe that it is not necessary to believe in God in order to be moral. In contrast, Israelis are nearly evenly split over whether belief in God is necessary to be moral. 47% says such a belief is necessary, while 50% say it is not. So, what do you say out there? Can morality be based on anything other than religion? Well, as you think about it, Pastor Maluleke is here to help us to navigate that thought. Pastor, is morality possible without faith?
Let me say, yes, it is possible, although it will be limited, because I mean, in many societies, I can give an example with the Chinese who do not believe in any God. With the philosophy of Confucianism, if we go to our Bible, Matthew chapter 7, verse 12, will say, "Do unto others what you would like them to do unto you." But 600 years before Christ, Confucianism had already said, "Do not do unto others what you would not want others to do unto you." So the golden rule was posited negatively. I've lived among the Chinese and the Koreans,
okay,
very moral people, and sometimes even without religion. But sometimes there are some concepts that we may not say are religious, but they are beliefs nevertheless. Some of them will believe in things like karma, that whatever you do will come back to you. What goes around comes around. So sometimes that kind of thinking influences them not to harm or to hurt others, because they don't want it to come back to them at a later stage. Humanism is the current secular philosophy that pursues ethics, human reason, justice, without any reference or foundation or basis on religious principles and norms. It's just based on human dignity and decency, and according to that, to humanistic philosophies, it is possible to achieve morality even without religion. The South African Constitution espouses principles of human dignity based on the Declaration of Human Rights and the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, and those are secular principle. So I would say, yes, it is possible, although it can be limited, because in a secular world, depending on the power dynamics, when people are drunk with power, then they prioritize positions, possessions, power, and profits over people.
Now, is it possible to be both religious and secular in one's worldview? I know these are probably contradicting theories.
Yeah, but I want to start this way and say, remember maybe during the week, I don't remember if it was Wednesday, I said, let's look at secularism as the ocean in which the boat or the ship sails, the ship of faith. Secularism is the environment. So they may not necessarily be contradictory. We practice our faith or our religion within this environment. I think on Monday when we dealt with the definition, yes, in some countries it's difficult to practice your religion. Because, for example, in China, the government is antagonistic to Christianity. So it's difficult to practice openly. In some countries, states are just indifferent. In South Africa, we embrace all religions. Now, is it possible to be both religious and secular in one's worldview? I would say, firstly, if we see secularism as a separation of state and religion, and you think that is right, I don't think that means you have a secular worldview. But you know, it means you see the positives in secularism. So that can be consistent with religion. But when we bring it as a philosophy that influences our daily behavior and outlook, and as far as we live our lives, how we educate our children, how we spend our money, then and how we engage in relationships and romance and things like that, I think it's very, it's a contradiction, because Christianity in particular will want you to bring God in every area of your life, that God must influence and reign, you know, over your body, over your mind, your emotions, your finances, your social life. And therefore, you wouldn't want to separate God from any area of your life. But yes, we are happy that the state and religion must be separate.
Yeah. Now, what are the dangers of being half in half in one's faith?
It's very dangerous. You know, like I said earlier, the secularism is the ocean in which the boat of faith sails. But if I were to give this analogy of a frog that is put in a pot and placed on a stove, but the water inside the pot is still cold, the stove is turned on and the water temperature keeps rising without the frog realizing that it's actually slowly being cooked to death. If we're in a secular state and we don't see the subtle changes and challenges in our educational systems, in our philosophies, in our workplaces, in terms of the subtleties of things that affect us and our values and our principles, the media, the things that we watch and we expose our children to, we will find ourselves thinking in a secular manner, behaving in a secular manner, even though we call ourselves Christian. It's always dangerous to be half and half, you know, and that's why 1 Kings chapter 18, Elijah would say to his people, how long will you falter between two opinions? Choose. If Yahweh is God, serve him. And if Baal is God, serve him. But you cannot falter between the two. And James chapter 1, verse 6 says, a double-minded man is unstable in all his ways. In all. If you're unstable in terms of religion, you'll be unstable in your relationship, unstable in terms of pursuing your career or your business goals and interests. So it is better to choose, even if what you choose doesn't make sense to others, but just have something that you believe in and be consistent with it. And Joshua will also say, choose you this day whom you will serve. If it is God, in fact, he says, as for me and my family, we will serve the Lord. So it's dangerous to be half and half because the environment in which we live will eventually then make us to be less faithful to God and rely more on reason and other humanistic, secular philosophies that are counter or contradictory to our faith.
Now, can faith, Pastor, play a role in addressing social issues like poverty, inequality, or environmental concerns? Because some have said, guys, if there are issues that are facing us, like these I've mentioned, but let's put faith aside and let's actually deal. Let's take out money. Let's go buy things. Let people be fed, you know, and let's deal with inequality. Let's face it head on. Now you come here with faith and stuff like that. So I ask again, can faith play a role in addressing social ills like poverty, inequality, or some environmental concerns?
Yeah, let's also let me say definitely yes, faith can play a role. And, mm-hmm. and you know, Matthew, in the book of Matthew, chapter 25, Jesus says, you know, I was hungry and you gave me food to eat. I was naked and then you clothed me. I was in prison and you visited me. Jesus's outlook of what he expects us to do is addressing human needs, feeding those who are hungry, you know, clothing those who are naked, you know, even in his own mission, Luke chapter 4, verse 18, mm. he says, the Spirit of the Lord is upon me. He has anointed me to heal the brokenhearted, to preach the gospel to the poor. So, yes, faith is actually supposed to lead us to have outreach programs to distribute food, clothing, mm-hmm. medical care, mm-hmm. to help those who are in disasters. We've had, about 100 deaths in the Eastern Cape due to the floods that we have just experienced,
yeah.
you know, through programs like or agencies like ADRA, the Adventist Disaster Relief Agency. Mm-hmm. We need to be able to address those pressing urgent issues in order to alleviate poverty and suffering. In terms of equality, we need to speak truth to power. You know, the caste system in India, our church is making inroads. Sometimes it's difficult to change things because we want to do mission. Mm-hmm. But as we do mission, we shouldn't condone the caste system that is there. You know, the racism in South Africa, we need to challenge it. We needed to have challenged it years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pity that sometimes even churches were separated along racial lines, mm-hmm. you know, blacks mm-hmm. and whites, even though they belong to the same congregation, mm-hmm. whether it is the Dutch Reformed or the Adventist Church mm-hmm. or the Baptist, you know. So you find that sometimes the church follows the political system instead of the church leading the political system. So it's after the dawn of democracy in South Africa that even the General Conference said, hey, you church in South Africa, you need to start merging. So who's leading whom? But the church needs to actually take a very vocal role in terms of addressing issues of inequality.
Mm-hmm.
Ellen G. White, a writer in America, wrote many articles, against slavery, you know, writing in advocacy of the abolition of slavery, mm-hmm. stating that all humankind is created equal. Religion is supposed to lead in that. We cannot take a back seat because, mm-hmm. in fact, when we talk about prophecy, people think prophecy is about predicting and foretelling the future. That's one part of it. But when we talk about the minor prophets in the Old Testament, prophecy is also about foretelling, not only foretelling. And foretelling is telling those in power to be just, to be merciful to the poor, to the orphans, to the strangers, to the widows. And that's the work of prophecy. That's the work of the church. Faith plays a role in that. Faith plays a big role in terms of the environment, because God, we know that God created this earth. It was not an accident from the Big Bang. We are stewards and we need to encourage others to be stewards of this earth. Maybe a little bit there, but on this one, definitely yes, faith needs to play a leading role in all of them.
Mm-hmm. Now, in terms of we say that we are a secular country, and many other countries are perhaps religious, countries, etc. Do you think that in terms of reaching out to people for Christ, you would struggle in a secular world than you would in a religious environment?
Oh, what a difficult question. But I think you'd actually. South Africa is, although it's secular now, in the days of apartheid, we used to call it a Christian country, as
Yes.
strange as that may be. And then it was easier in the schooling system to have assembly, to pray, to sing Christian songs. People used to go to church, and then we democratized, and then we became secular in the state, in the sense that we took religion out of the education system and or the state programs. It's difficult to people have freedom, but we also have freedom to evangelize and to preach. Like I said, it's the ocean in which we fish. Fortunately, currently in South Africa, people are still religious, honestly, and they are open to being influenced. It's much more difficult than in the past, but I still favor this kind of environment because if you think about it, two-thirds of the population of the world resides in Muslim countries, Buddhist countries, and things like that. In Asia, two-thirds of the world's population is in Asia. And if they are not secular and they don't open the space enough, then we are stuck in Africa, we're stuck in America, we're stuck in South America, which is mostly Catholic. But we will not be able to reach Asia. So in Brazil, for example, it's a Catholic country, and I think Brazil is one of the fastest growing in terms of conversions to Adventism because people already believe in the Bible. So it's easier to have a Bible study with someone who says, okay, I also read the same Bible, I also believe in God, and then you have a common starting point. But if we would think that to have religious countries is the best thing, then we have a big challenge because we are not being given space to maneuver in what we call the 1040 window, which is in mostly in northern from northern Africa to Asia.
Pastor, as you are talking, I'm now thinking. Perhaps when we talk about secularism here and really people who are religious, whether you are Christian or Muslim or Buddhist, etc. We generally believe that we make a choice to follow Christ. We make a choice. Is it if we look at it deeply, if you are born in a country like South Africa, which is, as you said earlier, historically religious and deeply Christian, I mean, to this day, actually, South Africa is registering 80% of its citizens as Christian, almost 80%. I think it's about 79% thereabout. Now, are we then able to say, you are generally a person who is having a choice to Christianity because one may argue and say, well, you did not really choose Christianity because you were born in that environment. Similarly, a person who is born in a Muslim country then may never necessarily have chosen to be Muslim, but they're born in an Islamic environment and therefore they automatically follow that. In a thought that they have actually made a choice to be Muslim when in fact they are actually born in that environment. Similarly, those who are in Christian. So do we truly make a choice, or is the environment within which we are born by and large responsible for how we, inverted commas, choose to be Christian?
Yes, I would say so. It does play a significant role in terms of our choice because you choose based on the options and the alternatives that you have. And sometimes we live in an environment to which we are exposed to a few choices. And if I'm Christian and I'm born within a Christian environment, I would say, wow, that's good. I was fortunate to be born in this environment and I chose it. But we find that we have a lot of what we call nominal Christianity. So I identify with Christianity, but I actually don't practice its principles and its values. And so sometimes in countries where you'd say we are registering 79% of people as Christians, that's what they identify with, but they may not be living according to the values and the principles of that religion. And that's the challenge of being born in an environment where you think you have made a choice, but you have actually not made a choice. You are just going through the motions. Because in our case, we don't enforce Christianity like the Muslims do. With the Muslims, you know, their religion infiltrates their in business, in their education system. Everything revolves around their religion, and therefore it's more enforceable. And even those people, they think they have chosen, but you know, they were born in within that environment, so they have not necessarily had an option of do I choose A or B. But you know, currently in the secular environment of South Africa, you actually have choices to make. You may be born in a Christian family, but the secular environment will force you to one day have to make a conscious, intentional, deliberate choice. So that we can eliminate a lot of nominal Christianity. Even in Jamaica, if you ask, we have a high percentage of Adventists in Jamaica, but they are actually nominal Adventists. We have a high ratio of Zimbabwe, of Adventists in Zimbabwe. Some of them are nominal Adventists. I just went to an Adventist school, born in an Adventist family. I identify as Adventist, but I don't live Adventism in my personal life.
Now, Pastor, what would be your final thoughts on this subject? I mean, we've been speaking about it since Monday, and we've literally looked at different sides. We dissected the topic from angle to angle. What would be your concluding remarks on the subject, practicing faith in a secular world, looking at what we've covered, and perhaps for the benefit of that those who are joining us only today, a parting shot, really?
Yeah, I would say for me, I actually appreciate being in South Africa because we are not being persecuted. We are not being prosecuted for our faith. We still have the freedom to preach, to evangelize, to proselytize, although there are limitations because in a school system, for example, you know, if you want to go and preach there, you must speak to the audience that already believes what you believe. There are limitations, but we are still not being oppressed. Let's maximize and optimize our opportunities as we live in this particular environment, because it may not always be like this. We are, like I said, we are a frog that is in a pot that is on a stove. Secularism separates religion from the state, but our prophetic view says as time goes by, there will be a merging of the state and religion, and that's how even the Sunday laws would be enforced. Now is the time to maximize. Let's do our best to live according to our faith, you know, be the best brands, the best ambassadors for what we believe in, because no one is opposing us. No one is fighting against us at this very moment. Let's not try to behave as if we are being persecuted when we are not.
I think I like that. We really, truly need to embrace that freedom and not behave as though there's any persecution at the current moment. Thank you, Pastor. It's always a pleasure having you. It's always a pleasure, you know, sitting at your feet and learning of these things and, of course, engaging and debating on these things. Blessings to you and your family, and may you have a fantastic Sabbath ahead.
Yeah, thank you very much for the opportunity to share and to discuss this issues with you.
Lovely. Goodbye.
Thank you very much. Bye.
Adventist World Radio, from broadcast to baptism, powered by SID Media.